Hello and welcome. This is Jenny Ray, an independent consultant with the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions team. Our team provides education, resources, and networking opportunities for military family service professionals as they help military families build resilience and navigate life cycle transitions. We invite you to engage with us and your colleagues in conversations on military life cycle transition issues. In this Let's Talk Transitions podcast, I'll be chatting with Ashley Mueller, Disaster Education Coordinator and Extension Educator with the University of Nebraska Extension, located in Lincoln, Nebraska. Our conversation particularly focuses on Ashley's role as an Extension Educator for Nebraska Extension and how she assists Nebraskans in preparing for and recovering from emergencies and natural disasters. Continue listening to learn how you can better assist those you serve when it comes to disaster and emergency planning and recovery. Thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure, Ashley, and welcome. To begin, can we please share a little bit with our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate the invitation and an opportunity to talk about disaster education. So I am a statewide extension educator with Nebraska Extension. I've been in that role for about 6 years. And at the time when I started, it was a brand new position, which I think is really an important testament to how responsive the extension, cooperative extension service is. Looking at these really big issues and identifying how these organizations can position themselves to really be responsive. And so the catalyst, really, there were several that led to the creation of my position was a severe weather outbreak in our state. And multiple communities were impacted. And, you know, extension was very responsive at the local level. But out of that was just this need realized of, you know, do we have the capacity to coordinate this and to really work on a statewide level with our state partners to think about more of these bigger, broader societal, social impacts of disasters. And so that's where my position came in. And it's been, I think, a really good opportunity to think about our work in extension and communities and families and youth development in agriculture and be able to be the connector. So that's what I do a lot every day is make connections in extension and find the research, not only from University of Nebraska Lincoln, but other universities, and share that information out and educate and work with partners to deliver some really good, meaningful learning experiences.
That's fantastic. Sounds like your work is just spreading out. I envision like a spider web. So it's reaching many different people.
That's a good analogy. Yes, definitely a spider web. And I've learned the web is getting bigger and bigger, which I think is also really great because there's room for people or room for other spiders on the web. And so I really liked it because I've had an opportunity to partner with different people that traditionally in extension we haven't had to. And I love it because I'm a relator. So getting to develop relationships around this topic is so important to me.
Oh, yes, especially. I'd love to learn more about those relationships a little bit later, but could we first touch base a little bit on your efforts as they're related to disaster preparedness, response and recovery?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's kind of a lot. And that's where I rely on my colleagues who are working across the state. And Extension is organized really similarly. You know, there are some different and unique approaches, but I think about National Extension. I'm very networked, local community driven, and that's really what we do in Nebraska too. So when I think about the work we do in preparedness and even response and recovery, it relies on community folks to really be engaged and involved there. And so I use a lot of my extension colleagues to help me understand what their local issues are, what's going on. We hear a lot in the disaster or emergency management realm that all disasters are local. And that's very true, right? These communities, these families, these individuals are dealing with things that may be not the same, the community down or, you know, this in another state. And so working then with our local folks to really find unique, meaningful, relevant ways to approach partnerships, to approach education. And so that looks everywhere from anything, I guess, from you know, bringing a workshop into a community and bringing people together to talk about that and figure out what a community plan might look like, to hosting a training program on managing volunteers in a disaster, to some online learning options. So it's really different. And it's exciting to see, especially now in these virtual times, what opportunities too are ahead of us and really reaching people in different ways.
Yeah, maybe you could talk a little bit about what that looks like as we're kind of transitioning to more learning through virtual opportunities and how we can connect to more of those people on the outside of that spider web. We'll just keep going with that analogy.
Yeah. So, you know, I think this is really important for us in Extension to be constantly reflective, really be learner focused. And this is more broad than just disaster education, but this is the context in which I look at things is, you know, we have to be really aware of, you know, who are we easily reaching with our work? But who are we missing? Just not out of, you know, we're intending to miss someone, but rather this, you know, we kind of get comfortable or, you know, we work with the same partners. And so taking that step back and thinking, you know, what are those vulnerable populations or where are some issues that maybe we've not thought about in our traditional Extension areas of work that really are now impacting the way people are living and making decisions about their lives and their families and even their communities. And so, you know, reaching folks in a virtual space is certainly an opportunity, but it's a challenge as well. With broadband not being accessible, especially I think about Nebraska, we have a lot of rural parts of our state. And so it is hard for folks to engage in a learning opportunity that way. And as a public university, our goal is to be accessible. So it does require creativity and it requires us to form relationships and to know people and kind of keep our doors literally and figuratively open so that we can, you know, engage and learn and co-create experiences together with the people that we're serving.
Sure. That definitely makes sense. And I guess you just have to make the education and all of that very timely. And it sounds like Extension is kind of always on it, doing that, like rethinking, reworking, how can we make this better?
Yes. Yeah. Timely. That's a fantastic way to describe it. Absolutely. It's thinking about or being aware of, right? What are those issues locally and being open to that and then saying, okay, we have an interest, folks have a need. So let's think about relevance here and find ways to bring that home.
Yeah. I guess what are some of those areas that the people that you work with are kind of struggling the most with right now? And I guess who might be the most vulnerable populations that you guys are serving?
Yeah, so, you know, food insecurity and food access are certainly areas that we were working in prior to the pandemic and to our flooding. We had a large incident in 2019 that really was a big catalyst too in how we are now as a statewide system approaching disaster response. But and thinking about, right, the needs of folks, you know, food access and food security is certainly one that has consistently been at the top. So it, you know, poverty or, you know, hunger is hidden easily. You know, kids go to school and, you know, we have wonderful backpack programs and services that provide. But it often, we can't tell, right? Sometimes that there is this underlying need. And so when an incident happens, right, this access to resources changes. Sometimes for the better, we see, you know, after disasters, people want to donate. They want to give their time to be able to help a specific cause. And so, you know, we see canned food drives happening, but, you know, the sustainment of that, right, is always a challenge because there's always another incident in which the attention then shifts. Yeah. And so, and thinking about then providing education and helping folks that are maybe SNAP recipients, so the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, know what their options are, certainly in the middle of a disaster is incredibly important. And then, you know, working with food pantries and food banks to ensure that the people that need those resources are getting them. But then we think about the challenge there too, especially in the pandemic, as we've seen that these food banks are having volunteer shortages. They traditionally relied on volunteers that you know, are unable to make it out because they themselves may be susceptible to catching the virus. And so that's really required us to think from a systems perspective. And so, you know, from there, we're looking at, you know, people that are hungry. So whether it is a youth or adults, other populations that we look at, you know, we think about youth in particular in urban settings, particularly may not have access. There's a lot of services around, but that are traditionally being underserved. Mm. And so how can we also too, as an organization that does a lot of youth development work, how can we provide opportunities for them to kind of have a safe space, to be able to be themselves and to grow and to learn with trusted adults and to be with peers that are challenging them in really good ways. And so those are just a couple of examples of the things that we're doing in disasters as it relates to vulnerable populations.
Wow. Just a couple examples, she says, and they're like these really great, these really great plans moving forward. I loved hearing that. Thank you for sharing. I guess I wonder what professionals can do to better support those who are in these more susceptible areas or, you know, because they're more susceptible due to X, Y, and Z, to the negative impacts that result from a disaster or a hazard.
Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest thing that professionals can do, even community members, those folks with the vested interest, right, of where they live and they want to make it a really great place to live, is to do some checking in, you know, reaching out to say, you know, maybe the local emergency management office, maybe your local extension office, maybe it's a social services or, you know, people serving organization to say, you know, is there a space here that I can help, you know, volunteer my time or, you know, maybe lead an initiative? Mm. So one of the things that we hear a lot about, at least we have in the emergency management realm over the past few years, is this whole community approach to emergency management. And that idea is that everyone can and should play a role in local emergency planning. And that in and of itself, emergency planning sounds really, you know, rigid and maybe not exciting. But right, this is where decisions are made and plans are developed that can really ensure that people in those communities are being included, right? So we talk about vulnerable populations or we talk about unique individuals is we want those people to have representation in this process so that these plans, we hope they don't have to be used, but in the event that they are, you know, there's an outline here of how that community, those leaders that are making these decisions in real time, know exactly what to do or at least have a starting place. And so there's ways for folks to definitely get involved and they might find out that, you know, it's easier said that, you know, it's easier than one might think to be able to give your time and effort to emergency planning for sure.
Yeah. That's funny because when you said it's not as, you know, exciting, I'm sure emergency preparation is not a flashy thing for people wanting to learn about, but definitely they'll feel much more prepared. And I was kind of diving into some of this research on disaster preparedness, and definitely a lot of the topics we're talking about that people weren't prepared necessarily because they hadn't experienced the disaster or hazard before. And so I wonder, kind of diving into your work, is research part of your role as an extension coordinator?
So I do some research. This is where I get to work with the specific folks on our campus that have research appointments. So my job is more to translate what we've learned or to use some of the, you know, the science that's being conducted there to be able to share that information out. But I think, you know, about as it relates to research, I've done some work or some study in, you know, like risk and crisis communication, you know, in some social sciences and behavior. And, you know, to your point about, right, emergency management and, you know, planning, that's exactly right. It's something that it's hard to get excited about because, or, you know, think about because if you don't have that direct experience, but the thing about too, though, is that we know is that when folks are doing emergency preparedness activities, whether it's putting together a disaster kit or a communication plan for your family, you know, whatever it may be, that it's really empowering and that it kind of can provide this sense of certainty, mm-hmm. Or maybe the sense of readiness, right? When we have these things in place, we're that much more prepared than we were before, which certainly eases our minds, right? When it comes to, whether there is a tornado warning or the waters are rising, yeah. Or whatever it may be, that at least we've done something to kind of start that process. So it's not so stressful in the moment. But it is hard though, because it's planning and doing all those things. It also is a little stress inducing in the moment, right? You're like, I don't want to think about it, because if it's out of sight and out of mind, then I don't have to worry about it. And I certainly feel with folks that feel that way, because it takes an intentional effort to say, I'm going to work on my emergency kit today, or we're going to update our communication plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's where if you guys were providing workshops or educational opportunities that way, I think it would kind of move people towards that goal of getting those things developed and put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And no shame, right? Like anything is better than nothing. So, yeah. Don't get down on yourself. I always tell folks when I'm out, like, I know this seems maybe like trivial, like a go bag, right? Like this mm-hmm. is something easy, but it's important, right? And don't discount that, because while you may not have a 72-hour kit, a go bag is still important, mm-hmm. And it's still really good.
Yeah, I love that, the go bag. I also think about, so we're kind of just going back to that vulnerable population, and a lot mm-hmm. of the stuff that I was looking at was those families that need extra or additional healthcare, or those families with children or youth with disabilities, mm-hmm. older adults. I think about these populations and I just wonder kind of how you might help them prepare a little bit more than others, and then how you can help them after a disaster happens.
Yeah, so this is where it's incredible, the partnerships mm-hmm. that we have come into play. So, and especially to, like I shared, working at that local level, okay. For example, like our community action groups, or even our community senior centers are fantastic partners. But, there's a lot that happens in preparing for a disaster, mm-hmm. even in responding and recovering, that the general public doesn't get to see, which is so, like, I get so disappointed sometimes, because I'm like, there's a lot happening and I just want to lift this up. So one of the things that is very quick, and I don't want to be generalizable, but we tend to see groups that are working together ahead of time in what we call community organizations active in disaster. Sometimes they're not called that. They may be called like a family coalition, mm-hmm. or they may go by another name. But it's all these groups that are really coming together to say, listen, we have a care, or we have a common goal to ensure that folks are resilient after, it could be a disaster, but it could be in, response to another community issue. Mm-hmm. And so these groups are working together, and it's beautiful because they're aware of what each specialty is for the different groups. And, who kind of takes the lead and is good at, say, managing volunteers. And then there's another group that's really good at maybe case management. So they're all working together. And so then after an incident happens, these groups either transition to a long-term recovery group, or these groups kind of form. But the idea is that they don't want to duplicate services, because there's nothing right worse than being redundant. Mm-hmm. Then it causes confusion. And so so then these groups are really, really focused on kind of that community or more broad jurisdictional level approaches to the vulnerable populations, for example, that you shared. And the idea is to ensure that those folks that maybe don't have access to resources otherwise are able to get that, or at least have a lead and someone to talk to say, okay, this is my unique circumstance. These are the challenges that we're facing. Where do we even begin? Mm. And so it's this wonderful partnership. Like I said, generally the public doesn't know this is even happening, but we've seen a lot of long-term recovery groups working in Nebraska after our floods in 2019. And it's just really encouraging, because I just know they're serving a lot of different people and really, really working to ensure that these folks are back to either the home that they were living in, or able to get, their children in school, and the adults in the family to have, maybe their stress is eased a little bit by just getting some assistance and getting some help.
Definitely. Wow, that's powerful. Kind of like the grassroots, so that these people are coming mm-hmm. together and they all have their little expertise and they work towards that.
I was just going to add too that it's pretty awesome as well because these groups work so seamlessly that you often don't know even like which agencies or organizations are a part of that, right? Like they're always quick to share, you know, what other agency or organization is doing. And, you know, they're not really great, which is good at lifting or tooting their own horn. But I think that there's a lot of groups that definitely deserve recognition that we don't even, like I said, realize all that they're doing to just be there to serve people and to help people.
Wow. And that's amazing. They're just so humble and they're just willing to help out. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about resilience and or you mentioned it anyways, but I wonder what types of resilient skills, I guess, if you will, might be present among individuals or those community members that kind of help people kind of weather or ride through these disasters or emergencies or things like that.
Yeah. So, wow, this is a loaded question.
Sorry.
I think resilience is certainly a big term to unpack. And I think that it is definitely something that looks different for each person, you know, each family, each county or community. But, you know, I think resilience is this idea that, you know, I don't want to say get back to where the state was right prior to the incident. But I think it's this resilience is a little bit, I see it as kind of grit, right? It's this grit of I am determined or I've made this determination to really, and maybe that's not as inclusive either. I'm just thinking, you know, maybe resilience, I'm reflecting here.
That's totally fine. I don't have it on the sheet, so sorry. Just kind of came up.
I want to be cognizant because actually there's been a conversation, on Twitter lately that I need to unpack about the term resilience and, you know, how we frame it. So admittedly, yeah. I think I need to look a little bit more into that as well, because I don't want it to be a one size fits all. But I really think when it comes to, you know, this state after an incident, right? We're looking at quality of life and we're looking at taking care of people and finding ways that we can, as those of us that serve people, right? Doing some reflection and saying, how can we be better at what we're doing? And as I shared earlier, right, about reaching people, being reflective on who we're not reaching to say, okay, like, are we doing what we can within the space that we have to help people recover? And help people feel like there's opportunity for them beyond this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we may not be able to do everything in extension, but we certainly know a lot of different agencies and organizations that do. And so that kind of becomes this matchmaking and this beautiful partnership of really serving people and really being in tune to unique circumstances and understanding what hurdles people may be facing. And that oftentimes those hurdles are deep. Right, they're not surface level, and we don't know everything that somebody is going through.
Right.
So there's a lot there.
Yeah, and I know that's always resilience is always a tricky word to me too, because I think like how you were describing it was what it is. Like it's so loaded, and it's different for everybody, and that there's no end to it, that you can't, you don't really go back to a normal.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people are going through that right now as we're facing this pandemic, is that people are like, we just want to go back to normal. And I don't think that people realize that maybe this isn't going to be, you know, like there is not, it's a new normal, I guess maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it becomes part of your story. Exactly. Yeah. There is no going back. Mm-hmm. We can't reverse the things that happened. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's this new state of being, this new normal. But yeah, it's part of our stories when we go through these things. Mm-hmm. You know, it just is how we deal with it and knowing what got us to be where we are and the community, right, that surrounds all of us.
Yeah. And it kind of makes me wonder if those community members that you were talking about who kind of form this family coalition have that grit, have that, I don't know. They've experienced these things, and so then they just want to give back. It'd be interesting to see what, you know, what brought them to where they are today in that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, motivations, right? What really brings people to this type of work?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they've seen or experienced suffering firsthand, or, you know, have certainly been through a disaster to know exactly that challenge after challenge that mm-hmm. those survivors face. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So anyways, I'm going to shift gears a little bit. You've talked a little bit about some of the resources, but I guess what are those specific resources that you have more commonly utilized to address the disaster-related issues within the state of Nebraska?
Yes. So I have the opportunity to be our extension point of contact to the Extension Disaster Education Network. And much like those kind of co-ads and long-term recovery groups, this tends to be a behind-the-scenes group, but it's so powerful. So it is really a coalition. It is a network of extension professionals across the country that are interested in disaster education. So whether their primary expertise is agriculture or it's youth development or it's, you know, wellness, we have a network of folks that are communicating around the issues and are also helping each other respond. And so when we had the major flooding in Nebraska in 2019, I relied on the network, you know, just for perspective and insight. You know, I am younger than many of the Eden members. And so for me, I didn't have, right, the institutional knowledge or understanding of some of the long-term implications of emergency management within an extension context. And so relying on these folks from whether it's North Dakota or Wisconsin, North Carolina, right? Relying on their expertise to be able to say, okay, this is helpful. I appreciate your perspective and experience. Eden also offers, though, a lot of really amazing, great resources. So it's growing every day. There is a directory of sorts, a resource management. I can't even recall the specific name, but it is on the Eden website. Okay. And, you know, whether you're looking for a topic on maybe stress in youth, or you're looking on a topic related to, you know, livestock management, you know, during a flood, there is a whole lot of information from vetted information from all of our extension services that are under one specific website, which I think is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And then the network also too drives folks to the different cooperative extension organizations in the states. You know, as we do not have the luxury in Nebraska of dealing with hurricanes. I'm not sad about that, right? So you're not going to see any hurricane related information from Nebraska. Mm-hmm. But if somebody happens to come, you know, stumbles upon the Eden website, or even actually our Nebraska disaster website, the idea is we can kick them back out to a state that has some of those specific resources that they're looking for. And so it's just really, I think, from a user standpoint, important to know that resource exists. The public can access that information as they have questions and want to know. It's also, I think, a really important resource for all extension professionals because not all of us have a background in emergency management or disaster response. But, you know, to go to Eden and say, hey, my colleague at Kansas State, I remember that she shared this information with me, but I can't remember where it was. Mm-hmm. So then the extension professional can go look. So it just makes our cooperative extension service stronger all around.
Yes, definitely. I like how it is, like you said, in one place. So people aren't going to have to go too many different avenues to find those resources. So Ashley, could you share a few additional resources that you think would be most pertinent to our listeners?
Yeah, so one resource in particular is from our Learning Child team, and they really focus on helping children cope, and of course, caregivers, so those important adults in children's lives, really can help facilitate what coping looks like, whether we're talking about a disaster or maybe another event or incident that happens in the community or within the home. And so our team has what they call the Read for Resilience program, and it supports young children's coping through storybooks. And this team has identified a lot of stories a lot of books that those caregivers can, you know, choose which book might be of interest or important based upon what's going on in their lives. And then along with each book, our team has developed a story guide. And so for that adult then, they can download the story guide and help facilitate a discussion around the topic of the book, about some of the themes that are presented in the book. So for example, a couple of the books that we have are very pertinent for this year. What is coronavirus? And there is a particular book that it focuses on what children can do while they are practicing this physical distancing. And that book is also available in French and Spanish. So what a wonderful opportunity for those caregivers to really, you know, dig in here to the topic. It's really heavy, but do it in a way that is, you know, visually appealing, that really helps young children, you know, understand what's going on and really make sense of the world around them. Some other stories that are addressed by the program include, you know, it's called Everybody Needs a Buddy, and it's about the importance of friendships. And, you know, the book uses animals as examples, but it really teaches kids how they can care for each other. And another book is called I Have a Little Problem, Said the Bear. And this is about how it feels to not be listened to. Especially maybe children have that feeling sometimes. And so again, just a whole host of books on a variety of topics and really kind of getting at this core of helping children cope with what they're seeing and experiencing.
I love that. Those sound like really great resources, especially for this time. So I really appreciate you sharing that.
And as I said, it's a free storybook reading guide that accompanies each of those books, and that those guides help adults walk through those stories, but also provides some activity suggestions. So we all know, especially right now in the time of coronavirus, activities, you know, we're kind of at a need for some of these. And so our team has taken that kind of care and thought to go through and identify and hopefully make it easier for caregivers to be able to address these topics and do it in a way that's connective for the kids.
Definitely. I love that. And I've actually signed up myself as a parent, so I'm really excited to take advantage of those resources. And I kind of work better off of having someone just lay it out for me, and then I can be able to just kind of know what to say or, you know, because sometimes you just really don't know what questions to ask and where to start. So those would be great.
That's great, Jenny. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think I'm so glad that you came across the resources and have ordered. You'll have to let us know how your experience is with it. And as a parent, I'm with you, right? Like, there's so many things that I don't know or have a hard time. This is not my background, is child development. And so for me to know that there are some amazing resources that are put together by people who do have this expertise is just kind of a relief, or just takes the burden or worry off of my shoulders. So hopefully you'll have a great experience with your Read for Resilience books.
I think so. I'm excited. And I will be sure to let you guys know how that turns out for us.
Great.
So I guess family service professionals can use this resource. I wonder how they might be able to build similar relationships like the ones that you've mentioned previously. So you talked about those networks, those family coalitions that are kind of built up from the grassroots. How do you think professionals might be able to kind of create these relationships in the areas that they are?
Yeah, so I think it just starts out with a conversation or a phone call or an email. You know, extension does look a little bit different in every county or every area, but I do know across the board that extension is really good at and passionate about facilitating connections. And so if a professional is interested, I would definitely say reach out to your local extension office. And start that conversation there and just say, you know, I'm interested in this, and this is what, you know, I'd like to learn more about. Do you know about this? Are you interested in working together? And then hopefully, you know, it can progress from there. So the extension professional might have that specific expertise or area of interest in their work and say, yep, let's work together. Or may say, listen, I have a colleague here that I know this is what he or she does. So my suggestion is you connect with them. And so then that ball can really get rolling. And on the community side too, the Extension Service also has some of those connections with these community groups. So they may be kind of that gateway as well to connecting or getting looped in on some of those groups too.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think that it kind of leads ways into kind of talking about military families. I know that you do not work specifically with military families directly, but they are like any other family, right? They experience the typical joys and challenges with a few additional challenges and joys thrown in there, like deployments or frequent moves. So I wonder if there's any partnerships within your network of extension that do connect with military installations or reserve and National Guard units.
Yeah, so we do have Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, and I know that in Nebraska in particular, our Douglas Sarpy, which serves the Omaha metro area, has done a lot with Offutt regarding youth programming. So out of school time and some additional 4-H opportunities and getting some learning experiences there. So, which I think is extremely and incredibly important, right? We think about the partnerships, and especially from youth development, we're looking at in Nebraska to grow our preparedness work through some specific youth-focused programming, kind of focused on that 5th to 8th grade range, which, you know, we've had great experience, at least in the Omaha metro there. So definitely some intersection there. And then when I think about National Guard, so our emergency management agency in Nebraska is really tied closely to with the Nebraska National Guard. And so to be looped in and represent Nebraska Extension on our emergency support function for our emergency operations center is another important way for being involved and aware, right, of kind of that structure of how incidents are managed. And I've actually learned a lot through that process too.
That's really cool. I like that you touched base about youth and wanting to focus on a disaster preparedness kind of for them. That would be interesting to see how that kind of unfolds. So you'll have to keep us updated what kind of comes out of that.
Yeah, we're super excited. We actually are going to be partnering with a national service program, the VISTA program. It's run out of the AmeriCorps.
Okay.
And we're going to be hiring in for 3 years some full-time VISTA members that will do some work to help us increase our capacity in youth education as it relates to disaster preparedness. So cool. Really excited about curriculum development and offering. We're looking at maybe a camp experience, an immersion kind of career exploration camp regards emergency management and health careers. So more to come from Nebraska Extension on that.
That's really cool. It would be interesting to see kind of what those activities look like too. So we'll have to touch base again.
I can tell you, we are going to include how to use a fire extinguisher.
Oh,
that is something,
cool.
You know, it sounds so simple, but you know, you think about it, they're actually a little involved. So, you know, it's important youth skills for adults and youth alike, right?
Yes. I can say that I actually used one. So it would be interesting to see. That'd be interesting to use and learn how to do that.
Yeah. See, there you go. So you'll have to come join us.
That would be great. I would love that. One of the avenues, I guess, is families that are transitioning. So maybe they're moving to different areas, maybe in Nebraska, or if they're going to be moving out of the state. How might professionals be able to help these families as they're preparing for those different transitions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the program areas in Extension is youth development. So we have a lot of professionals or experts around well-being for children. And in information for their caregivers, whether parents, child care providers. And so for professionals that work with military families, I just think about, right, the transition of moving from one place to another can be really hard for adults and let alone children, right? New spaces to get used to and new places to understand, and then the processing, right, of leaving some favorite things behind. And so professionals, I just would suggest, you know, looking into what Nebraska Extension and our Extension Services have to offer as it relates to helping with that process. And there's a lot of great programs now online too, so in this virtual space, but in person that may help too with that transition and preparing a family or preparing kids for what's about to happen or what has happened. And I think this isn't just a unique Nebraska Extension topic. It is Extension across the board. So youth development is something that we're really known for and do have a lot of information and resources available on.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. I think that'll be really helpful. And then I think that consumers or individuals, families can also seek that Eden resource that you talked about earlier. Just that it's not just for professionals, it's for anybody. So maybe if they're moving to across the state, they could reference that and see, you know, what kind of hazards or emergencies might be in this area and how can I best prepare.
You read my mind. I was just going to say that. Yes. Eden would be a great place to start, or your local extension service, to really see what are the incidents that are those hazards that we need to be aware of. As I shared, Nebraska, we do not get our fair share of hurricanes, but I do know more about hurricane preparedness and working with our folks from down south, you know, but that would be something that if I were to move that way, I would definitely be checking out extension resources from those extension services there. So definitely encourage folks to do that.
Great. Thanks. I can do that. I'll share that on our web link with this podcast. I wonder if there's any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners that might be helpful as take-home messages or anything else you'd like to share.
I would just reiterate back to individual, you know, planning, that it really is so important. It is that empowering process. And one thing I hadn't touched upon yet is involving the whole family in preparing. Much like, right, we think about moving and involving the family and helping, right, pack our toys or these other things. Emergency planning isn't any different. The whole family should be involved, and it can really be empowering. Of course, right, there are some topics that may be harder to talk about with kids, but when done correctly or right, using some of those resources on youth development, it can really help a child be really informed about what may be happening and help them know, right, that we've gone through this process as a family to talk about who I need to get in touch with, right? If I'm at school and something happens, now I know where my mom is or my dad or a family member that I can connect with. Or I'm at a friend's house, right? And I have a set of phone numbers with me, because that's part of what we do in my family, is ensure that everybody has a way to connect with somebody. So when you involve the family, it can really be this really empowering process where everybody is working together, teamwork, right? This important aspect of problem solving together and just ensuring, right, as a family, that we're all on the same page. And so just encourage folks to think about that and the power that goes along with that process.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. It's almost like, oh, you forget about that, but that's so important. And I think, like you said, it empowers people. And I think it would also build those resiliency skills. So that they feel that they can, you know, brace for what's to come.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there's a process here too of, right, identifying what those hazards are. Mm-hmm. So if we recently moved to Nebraska, you know, as a family, we can talk about, well, what are some things that we would have to worry about? Of course, tornadoes are very active here, flooding, you know, but there may be some things, right, specific to the locations of listeners that it would be a really great time and be intentional to talk about those as a family and what to know and ease some of those worries and stresses, right? When the tornado siren goes off or the phone alarms are going to warn about a significant weather event or something.
Definitely. And I think that's where professionals can play the biggest role too, is kind of getting these conversations started within families, being that outside person that kind of asks those difficult questions and has the resources to kind of help them prepare, whether that be in a disaster or an emergency, I think.
That's exactly right. Exactly. Is that we all need that person that gives us a little nudge or a little like, hey, have you thought about this? And I know I appreciate those people in my life. And so those professionals, that is definitely something that they could help facilitate and get that conversation started.
Yeah. I checked out your Facebook page, and I'm going to be sharing that link after this podcast. And I saw on there, there was a post about preparing with your pets and things like that too. And I think that sometimes people are like, oh yeah, duh. But that's something that kind of hit to me. And I was like, oh, I kind of forgot.
yes.
So that's a great piece too. And I think those social media nudges or reminders are also really helpful for people too.
Absolutely. You know, just encouraging professionals and the people that they work with alike is, I think social media is such a powerful education tool. There's so many great resources. Like I think everything from FEMA or the federal level that are doing a lot of education down to right our extension services and other community partners is I learn every day on social media. I find some great video or, you know, graphic to be able to share. And so, yeah, just never underestimate the power and information that is available right at our fingertips on that.
For sure. It is definitely beautiful for that reason. From all of us at the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions team, thank you so much, Ashley, for taking time to chat with us today. For those listening today, thank you for joining us. I encourage you to refer to the resources mentioned in this podcast on our website under the list entitled Additional Materials. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to learn more about disaster preparedness and recovery, simply go to our Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions website and find additional resources available, including podcasts, blogs, free webinars, at militaryfamilies.extension.org/family-transitions.
This production is based upon work supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy, U.S. Department of Defense, under award number 2019-48770-30366.